Hello, folks. Okay, looks like we have a connection now. Sorry about all the technical problems. I was starting to need to reconnect as well right there. But yes, we have your host, Paul Edward Stevenson, here with us on revisionmedia.org with the show Revelation. All right, Paul. Hello.
Hi, Richard. Yeah, so it's good to be with you. It's good to be with everyone who's listening. Should we give out the number? We just thought we would have a chat here tonight. Sometimes it's good because I'm in the UK, you're in Chicago, and we're all experiencing a lot of the same type of stuff, really. I mean, the Bank of England over here has just announced, you know, they're looking at possible negative interest rates. The same phenomenon is going on over there with the, you know, almost negative interest. The interest rates are so low. The Jewish money print has gone into hyperdrive, so I thought it'd be good to have a chat, you know, because as I said, what's happening, you know, here is just happening on a smaller scale than it is in the US, because, you know, you've obviously got the Federal Reserve, we've got the Bank of England, what's happening over there? Can we give out the number in case anyone does want to call in? It's I mean, I've got a UK number. Is that the correct number? Is
it that's an exit code for the UK, actually.
Okay.
So, I mean,
give out the number, Richard.
That's 855-492-6049. Again, that's 855-492-6049. Anyone wants to call?
Yeah, because it'd be interesting to hear how it's affect, if anybody wants to call in, to hear if they have any views, questions, and just to hear what their experiences and their, you know, their circumstances are and how this might affect them, you know, this whole so-called pandemic that's going on.
Yes, I mean, I'm certainly convinced by now that the reaction to this has been completely exaggerated, and I see it primarily being to have a controlled demolition of the Western economy. I mean, I see the United States, UK, Europe, pretty much all connected as part of the, you know, the Western banking forces and corporate forces, as this has now been up to a serious threat looming in the future with China, Russia, and a number of other countries. Already aligned to compete outside of the control of the U.S. SWIFT system, the U.S. petrodollar domination. I mean, a number of other countries, of course, including Iran, North Korea, and many who are willing to be relatively neutral as well. I mean, Russia wants a system of their own, but are already doing well with the Chinese system, trading with China and others. And, of course, I just heard the U.S. complaining to Israel. They want ties severed between them and China because Israel's ready to just hop on board if there's a permanent economic shift of power on the globe to China rather than being a U.S.-European dominance. You know, Israel's ready to just leave the U.S. in the dust after it parasites as much as it can. I don't know why that's so.
Surely not. Our greatest friend, our greatest democracy in the Middle East. Are you saying that they might be more interested in their own interest than the United States, than the interests of those in the United States?
Absolutely, definitely, I would say that. Yeah, we have so many people. I mean, where you are, I'm sure as well. Here, I mean, we have just so many people in politics with their loyalty to Israel. Anyone who's a military sort of conditioned upbringing is also very loyal to Israel. And of course, throughout the Midwest, very religious, you know, a lot of Christians, they call it the Bible Belt throughout the U.S. with a string of all land border nation states here in states in the U.S., which are very much with this Christian Zionist mindset, unfortunately.
And this dispensationalist, you know, of course, this rise to, you know, oh, this is the end times now, and, you know, this is it now, and the tribulation and all the rest of it, and, you know, it's just, this is just feeding into that, of course, for all those people who have a religion called Christian Zionism. The rest of us just have a religion called Christianity. you know, literally the, you know, the end times and, you know, looking through the newspapers for basically to, the, you know, to trying to understand the Bible. I mean, this is not really the way you understand the Bible. But yeah, the Christian Zionist is a tragic phenomenon and a dangerous phenomenon. It's a wrecking ball and brings Christianity into bad light, really. You know, the Bible Belt crowd and, you know, even the pastor of my church, great guy, believes wholeheartedly in dispensationalism. And I have to be very gentle with these people because you're kind of rocking their world when you have to try and explain it to them. And it's kind of embarrassing. It's kind of embarrassing when you're sitting down and you're kind of schooling your pastor.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's supposed to, you know, and you're trying to do it in the right way, you know, but respectful. The reality is, the reality is Christians, you know, pastors are, in most cases, are well-meaning guys who go to theological seminaries, which don't teach them the Bible. It teaches them theological constructs and systematic theology, which adheres to a lot of the time to, you know, particular, you know, theological systems like Calvinism and the dispensationalism. So they learn the Bible through a particular lens. And then the church that sent them to theological seminar and funded it, if their parents didn't fund it, because, you know, it's usually the privileged, the leadership of the church is usually decided on privilege because it costs about £5,000 a year to go to one of these theological seminars. And then they come out and then they teach their congregation this stuff because that's what they've been taught. And then their congregation don't know of anything else. So then you get a, you know, someone like me rolling into one of these churches and everyone thinks you're a heretic until you actually explain to them that there are other views just because they have never heard them.
Absolutely. You know? Yes. And I mean, I didn't mean to give the wrong impression of China. I realized the chain of my statements may have alluded to more of this China bashing, blaming China for everything. I think that's a tool that the Western elites are using so we don't place the blame where it rightfully deserves upon them, both for the looming crash that was already coming and for this controlled economic demolition that they're enforcing with these lockdown rules, with this completely exaggerated reaction. At this point, I mean, the numbers are so skewed, everyone who could have any variant of a coronavirus in their system and dies is being used to inflate these numbers. Basically, it's not even as deadly as the seasonal flu is what seems to be in the real numbers at this point. So the fact that they're completely destroying the U.S., they're willing to admit to a 43% destruction of the economy, the stock market, and unemployment, if they're admitting to these ridiculous numbers of unemployment now in the 30-something percentile, you have to believe it's much higher than that because they always try to talk down the damage. So it's just ridiculous. And people don't...
Yeah.
We know about all these agendas. Agenda 2030 used to be Agenda 21. And just all of these globalist agendas that many people out there, of course, do not... So they don't see all these connections. They don't see the motives. That's what's difficult to wake people up.
And more often than not, you know, it's like, you know, what they do is they scare people into everything. I mean, this is very like what happened with 9/11 or with invading Iraq. You know, they terrify people and they push forward their agenda first. They've got their little lackeys, the politicians and our governments, who will answer the difficult questions and take some stick from the media, apparently. But they get it done first. And that's what they've done here. The damage is done now. It's irreparable. They've destroyed the economy. It's just that we have it. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like jumping off a cliff. Now, it's a very high cliff. You haven't hit the bottom yet, but you've jumped off it. It's only a matter of time before you hit the bottom. You can't not jump back off that cliff again. And, you know, once they... They've done what they've done, and they, you know, they'll answer all the questions, you know, later on about, oh, why did you take this action? And they'll have any number of excuses. We were following the science, which is just basically speculation dressed up as science, and they'll make all sorts of excuses, but they don't care. That's what Boris Johnson, that's what the politicians are all paid to do. They get a seat at the table. They have to work a little bit harder than the central bankers and the real kings and the Talmudic central banks. And they have done the damage now. I mean, this is going to be the biggest wealth transfer in human history. This is what the Jews always got into trouble for in Europe. Usury and rapine, land theft, and they're stealing everything. With every dollar that's printed up, it's just more theft. They're buying up everything. They're socializing. They're, you know, you have a situation where you have the privatization of profits and the socialization of losses. It's a communist revolution, really, in many ways, or a fascist revolution. I mean, people really think that fascism and communism are very, very different. I mean, in some ways they are, but in another sense they are authoritarian. It's the aligning of corporate and state powers. It's just that there are nuances to it, but they are largely on the scale of things. And you know, it's like they were trying the same thing with this global warning thing. Same type of thing. It's always some sort of communist type, authoritarian power grab, masquerading as having our best interests at heart by some great threat. And I just think they thought that they couldn't wait. They couldn't wait for this global warming thing. In 12 years, they said the world was going to end. That's just too long. We need something a bit sooner. We need to get on with our agenda here. So the coronavirus is perfect. They've just done it now. And ignorance is fatal. Not everyone tunes into shows like this or shows where people are informed. They call us conspiracy theorists. Well, what's coming down the tracks now, they should have listened. Because they're, as I say, ignorance is dangerous. It's fatal. People thought there's going to be a V-shaped recovery from this. And now the penny's starting to drop that, they're not just going to come back out and, oh, the government's helped us out. We're giving us money. This is cool. And then we'll go back to our jobs in July or August. Most of the employers are not going to be there, let alone the jobs that they've been given them. And if the employers that are going to survive it, they're going to be cutting right back. People are working from home. Their offices, they're going to save money on their real estate and their, the sort of outlay for offices in London is going to change demographics in London and the big cities because people are going to move out to the country because they don't need to be in the cities to work. People aren't going to have the jobs to go back to, and the unemployment rates are going to even soar even more once this furlough, once they pull away that safety net of furlough, it's off to the job centre. UK jobs claims soar by nearly 70% in April. The number of people claiming unemployment benefits increased by the most since records began in April to reach almost 2.1 million, according to the figures capturing the onset of the coronavirus. But of course, as we've alluded to, and you stated quite rightly, it's not the coronavirus, it's what the government has done. In a reflection of mounting job losses across the country, the ONS, the Office for National Statistics, said about 856,500 people signed up for universal credit, which is just welfare, includes housing and living welfare, Job Seekers Alliance, and driving up the overall UK claimant count by 69% in a single month. By the way, this is the same ONS, the Office for National Statistics, which came out recently and said that probably one in four people have already contracted the coronavirus. And this is the problem. People are saying, oh, well, you can't compare it to flu because this is much more contagious. But who cares if it's more contagious, if it doesn't do you any harm? If you're not 79, which is the average age of the people who died in Italy, and I think the average age in Europe is about 77, or if you don't suffer from dementia or gross obesity or what's the other one? Respiratory illnesses. If you don't suffer from diabetes, stuff like which is dangerous. Anyway, even heart disease and cancer are on there. I mean, you're going to die from a lot of these things anyway.
Absolutely. And the single greatest transfer of wealth is a very important point that you're making there. I mean, this is the perfect cover, and the perfect scapegoat for any economic ruin this creates, possibly wiping out, for the most part, virtually the entire middle class to which will possibly never recover if they put in a lot more draconian policies and laws from this point forward. I mean, they keep talking about this new normal. It sounds like a situation, where you have these oligarchs living in their palaces, a big moat in between, which you cannot cross, and then all the serfs. And basically nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's neo-feudalism, and you're basically, there's only two ways to pay for this. You either inflate the debt away, which is horrible, or you massively increase the taxes and public, and stop spending on public services. Either, the latter is a more honest way. You stop bailing everyone out, and people are supposed to be able to sort of withstand a crisis like this. The other one is even worse. It's just like a drug addict who just keeps, you know, money printing is just like taking a drug addict just keeps taking more cocaine, and you're like, you know, you're getting dangerously, you know, you're in dangerous levels of this cocaine. You really need to withdraw, and you've been in a bender for the last 2 months, and you can't stop taking it, and you know you've got to withdraw from it, and you think, well, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it next week, and eventually, you know, you've got two choices. You're going to have to face the pain of withdrawal, or you're going to die. And what the Federal Reserve is doing is just like, they're getting on the phone to their drug dealer and they're saying, how much have you got? Well, we've no shortage of cocaine. Okay, bring it all. You know, and
exactly.
We are not going to face that hangover. So we are prepared to, like, you know, go head to head here with this freight train and obliterate it. It's going to be like it's just going to implode. It's going to be like a black hole. It's just like a bond bubble. It's a property bubble. It's anything you can think of bubble. And all these people in the property bubble, for example, people really overleverage themselves with debt. It's the same here. You know, they're maybe earning 60, 70, maybe 100, maybe 120,000 a year, the middle classes. And because their houses are worth, they bought them for maybe like $250,000 or 300,000, maybe 15 years ago or 10 years ago, and now they're worth 800, 900,000. These people are borrowing on their houses. So even though they're earning good money, they can afford to pay their mortgage, which was cheaper when they bought it anyway. And they are having a lifestyle which is probably double of what they earn. And if they lose their jobs, they're still going to have to pay those bills. And guess what? They're all going to default on their two cars. They're going to default on their mortgages. They're going to default on those credit cards, which have given them nice holidays and buying their extensions and their little jacuzzis in the garden and stuff. I work in gardening. I see these people now. I'm actually working. I have one job I do in gardening. It's picked up. I think I'm lucky. I think gardening work has kind of continued. But one of the sectors I'm working for is luxury kind of property management. And some of these guys are oligarchs. One of them's a Russian billionaire. They're above the economy, so I'm probably going to like be okay to keep working. But there's other people we do work for in a different company where it's just smaller people, and it is the middle classes. And, you know, a lot of them are kind of tech guys, and they work in IT and, you know, or whatever and stuff. And a lot of those jobs are going to go too. And those are the guys who are 35, 38, 41, 42, they're earning 80,000 a year, 90,000 a year. They've really got much bigger houses because they made a bit of money and they can get a mortgage because they'll lend you so much money. Those guys are all going to suffer. A lot of those houses are not going, they're not going to be able to maintain them. They're going to have to, you know, seriously scale down if the dominoes fall away. I think they're going to fall, you know. And it really is going to be those oligarchs that we do their gardens for. It takes you about 3 hours to mow their lawns, Richard. They're so big. Those are the guys who are above it, and they're going to get richer, and they're just going to suck up all that money, all that wealth. And it's by design, as you know. And, you know, the Federal Reserve, they print money out of thin air, you know, and then they basically launder it. They legitimize the money by laundering it through the government. And by buying up assets, buying up bonds, even junk bonds, buying up everything with money that they print out of thin air. I mean, this is just, it's, I mean, when are people really going to start to, in my daily dealings with people, people don't understand that our economy is basically dominated by, you know, central banks who have got absolutely no right and no authority to be creating money the way they do, and then buying up and using it and lending it to people at interest. On what authority do they do this?
The only substantial power we've really seen for any length of time in the West standing up against usury, it really has been Christian factions of the church. I mean, you know, anything else, like any governments, which tried to break free of all of this, be against this, didn't seem to last very long. I mean, when we look at Germany, more recently with Libya, for example, and the gold dinar. But, I mean, for the most part, we have that as the only, and that's why it's been under attack much more lately, I'd say, because they don't want any sense of people having the right to this sort of sovereignty with regard to the currency they trade with. and to not be exploited. You know, I don't know. There's so much social engineering that's just moving into high gear in these times we're living through. You know, our generation in general, this Generation X, I guess you'd call us. And
yeah, we've seen it all, mate. You know, we've seen it. Well, I shouldn't say we've seen it all, but our generation has seen the most dramatic change in our lifetime. Because I'm more or less 40, just over 40, and there's like in that generation, you've seen so many changes demographically, economically, culturally. You know, we've known it one way, kind of, and then we've seen this sort of pernicious incremental, but then exponential sort of alteration and degeneration of the culture, of the demographics of the country and the economy. I mean, even in the last 10 years, so much has changed, you know. We've really sort of gone into, you know, is it like 1984 stuff, isn't it? Brave New World stuff. It's even worse than that. It's head spinning, really, isn't it? I mean, this whole lockdown thing, you know, when you're informed and we've been talking about this sort of stuff for years, and you're in the lockdown situation, and everybody thinks, "Oh, it's just this coronavirus, and the government's really kind, and they're helping us out." And you know what's really going on? It's surreal, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes, like a real life dystopian sci-fi novel, just like you say. I mean, there's really, and this sort of control from these banking elites. It's unfortunate that most people aren't even interested in this information. They don't realize how much this could change everything about our quality of life. You know, I mean, just the amount of work you put in an hour and the amount you should be able to be compensated toward your survival, your expenses, your livelihood for that. It's just so out of proportion. And people just have no idea.
Well, well, they, you know, the way they print up money, it makes a mockery out of labor, you know, because you can go out, you know, you can't help it. And the guy I'm working with is the same, you know, he feels the same. You can't help but feel it sometimes. You think to yourself, you know, when the government's, now, you know that, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and this is going to be the most expensive free lunch ever served, and it's going to be the most expensive summer holiday that people have ever had, or as you guys call it in the States, a vacation. You know, it's going to be the most expensive summer vacation because a lot of people think that's what it is. They think they're just going to go back to work. And after the government have helped us out now, let them deal with it. They've got loads of money anyway. And this just shows that, you know, they're keeping us down and we can be looked after at the end. I mean, this is like Jeremy Corbyn. This is he couldn't have seen this in his wildest dreams. I mean, there's no reason for Bernie Sanders to run anymore because Donald Trump went to bed one night as Donald Trump. And he woke up as Bernie Sanders.
Yes, and, I mean, with these economic stimulus payments to individuals, I mean, you're gradually getting them dependent on just this whole communist mindset, this whole dependency on the state. And then there's the whole vaccine agenda. I mean, right now, Trump is saying that it's not going to be mandatory, but just watch how many things you may be restricted from doing. You know, this is how they're going to get around that, I'd say. And it's just a huge concern just how much our liberties are being completely trashed in this whole process.
Yeah, so they'll do the wealth transfer. They'll get us dependent on the state. They'll restrict our freedoms. And probably at some point, they'll create a world war out of it. I mean, I really hope we stop short of that, but I think anything can happen. I mean, before this coronavirus thing happened, I don't think anybody could have foreseen this type of thing happening. So we've been talking about this for years. I mean, we've been saying things like, you know, remember we were talking about the Jewish thing and, you know, Henry Ford spoke about this in his book. And he was talking about, you know, no one wants to talk about the Jewish thing because, you know, it's like, you know, they don't want to be called racist or whatever, but it's just kind of impolite or it's like they don't want to go there. But as I often said, when you're on your knees and when your children are on their knees and you're starving and your freedoms are massively, hugely restricted where your life is like a dog, then you might not be so polite when it comes to who did this. Because people will ask, and that's always what happens. And when it gets bad enough, then people will ask, how did this happen? Why didn't I know about it? Who's doing it? You know, is it the government? Is it this guy? Is it that? You know, it's the central banks and colluding with the governments. They're all part of a network, and the media are a big part of it, of course. And you know, it's all of them, and they're bringing it about for control. They don't even care about money. It's, you know, it's all about control for them. And we're just like dogs to them, mate. You know, that's just the way it is. And you know, it's just mind blowing. It really is. The whole thing is just so surreal.
But they're engineering.
It has to get bad enough.
They're engineering an increased inevitability toward this dependency, and an increased forced dependency of a much larger percentage of the population than ever before. Not just a wealth transfer, but a transfer of just a lot of people's sense of independence. I mean, this communist welfare state, the sort of image they have, where in the future, yeah, they can force you to get a vaccine, any sort of censorship they wish, you know, restrictions on perhaps even the sort of work you want to do for your livelihood. If this continues, there's no limit to how much we won't have free will.
Well, when you hear this, what we've done, what our government's done, they've got this scheme going. I mean, you couldn't make it up. Well, the government's now employing 25,000 new track and tracer employees. These people are to track and trace the virus to see who you've been in contact with so they can track the virus, wink, wink. It's a little app you have on your phone, and I think they're going to eventually make that mandatory. So they've expanded the government by 25,000 employees, and, of course, the unemployment is so bad that people want work. So, you know, it's a bribe, you know. You lost your job. Well, why don't you come and work for the state? And you can like be one of the, you can almost be like a policeman. You're like part of the coronavirus police force. And again, you know, who's paying for that? They get, you know, they get you to pay for your own enslavement. It's, you know, and people will go for it. I mean, they're confident. 25,000 jobs.
So I also, you know, heard about something. Job. I also heard about something recent in the UK there, where they needed a large amount of workers to harvest crops. I think the number was like 60 or 90,000, and they aren't taking any applicants from any native Brits, any native Englishmen, only these migrants, these economic migrants, these third worlders who are getting shipped in are the only ones they're accepting for these jobs. So they're trying to displace the native populations as much as possible to get people who are more compliant, more dependent, aren't going to question the state, no matter how totalitarian it gets. And at the same time, destroy so many small businesses, so much of the middle class, which is where any sort of rebellion and resistance to oppressive government occurs. You know, that's really where people can take a breath, are financially well off enough to have time to research and to be active in local politics and what could lead to change. And they know this.
Yeah, because if you're not strong enough economically to withstand this, you're going to be squashed by this. And then what choice do you have but to be dependent on the government? And here's the question. What happens then if the government eventually have everybody completely dependent on them and they say, well, we haven't got any money? Then what? You imagine the carnage then? I don't think they'll do that. But, you know, no one's going to. I mean, you know, I mean, we've always been more socialist over here anyway than the United States. You know, the central banks have always had a foothold in the European countries, which is what really freedom in America was about. In the 19th century, the United States had wealth beyond, it was the envy of the world, because free market capitalism boomed. And for the first time in pretty much human history, you had the largest percentage of wealth was held by the middle classes. And then gradually, when the Federal Reserve went in there, they gradually socialized the United States. And over time, that was just perniciously ate away at. There was, you know, the national debt is now what, just the national basic debt is like $27 trillion, I think. And just, you know, they're just printing up money like it's going out of fashion at the minute. So this is what they always want to do, and this is what you're always having to fight against. But you know, if you, they make it so difficult for small businesses, all the regulations, just big government interfering in education, interfering in, you know, in your business, just regulations. And, you know, everything the government touches, they just destroy. They just make it harder. Everything they interfere with. I'm sick and tired of them, Richard. You know, they just run our lives all the time. I mean, you guys in America, it's kind of your the creation of America was created by the founding fathers of the United States to get away from that, and poor old America is right back where it started from, what it came to get away from. It's really tragic, you know, because when you look at the history of the United States, you look on and you think, well, there, you know, that was a project that was wonderful. It wasn't all great, but it was mostly great. You know, compared to the poverty that was, you know, in Europe. And King George taxed the Americans, the serfs, or taxed the people here at 20%. I mean, the United States is even worse now than it was under the rule of King George. The taxes are just through the roof. So what you get then is you just get, like, you just end up getting socialism. And people blame it. People are blaming capitalism for what is essentially socialism. And their solution for what they for this evil capitalism is more socialism. So I don't even think Donald Trump's going to survive it, because it's going to be a vote for, do you want freedom or do you want free stuff? And people this year have got dependent on free stuff. They think it's the norm. They think the money's there. They feel that they've been proven correct, the socialists, the Bernie Sanders lovers. And they think, right, we were right. All these evil people, these evil capitalists, there's loads of money. Just give us some money. We don't even have to go to work and work in our shitty jobs. And they're going to fucking vote for the Democrats, who are going to give them more free stuff. Notwithstanding, Trump will blame the coronavirus and say it was the greatest economy in human history and all the rest of it. Of course, it wasn't the greatest economy. It was just a bubble. All he does is, like, lower interest rates and give tax breaks to mostly corporations. And then claim it's the best economy because he's just, like, people are spending more with false confidence, because the whole thing's generated on confidence. It's not generated on reality. And then the coronavirus comes and it exposes it for what it really is. It's just a Ponzi scheme. And, you know, so I think this is going to be the end of Trump potentially, because if you really want socialism, then you may as well vote for the real thing rather than voting for Republicans who are largely Republicans in name only, you know, who still have some semblance of free market capitalism in their thinking. Do you know what I mean? Because people have got dependent on it, like you were alluded to earlier, and it's going to be very hard to wean them off it.
It's interesting how you've made that reference to the United States having been socialized in the sense as if it's already reached completion, or at least near completion. And I can see the truth in that, although most people perhaps wouldn't see it yet for what it really is. We really are near that point where, you know, we've just had this Trump phenomenon since 2016, and the momentum which elected him and who are still Trump supporters, for example, and also just the Patriot movement in the U.S., what is left of it. You can definitely see that being at a time where we are very near the end, if something serious doesn't turn things around, I don't even want to say day now, any hour now, but certainly, yes, we are pretty much near. And this is a perspective from you over there in England, seeing that the U.S. is pretty much completely communist by this point. Although it's not obvious on the surface.
You guys still have your guns. You know, we used to talk about, you know, even the nationalist movement over here. Largely, there is no nationalist movement over here. We always had a kind of a useful idiot, Tommy Robinson led up anti-Islam movement. That is largely the nationalist movement here. The United States still has, yeah, and they would be the typical Trump supporters. They still have, you know, patriots, but you see, I don't, when the Republicans are a disgrace, for voting for that stimulus. Now, I understand the pressure to vote for that, but if they're principled and they actually are Republicans, you don't bail out anybody. You know, you don't socialize people's losses, or if you do, then socialize their profits too. But you can't have it like, you know, both ways. And so they shouldn't bail out anybody. Painful as it is, then the economy will correct itself, the free market will correct itself, and you will have a difficult time for a few years, but it'll pick up. But this is going to go on for more than a few years. I mean, the Great Depression in 1929 didn't recover until pretty much officially until 1954, 25 years. And this is worse than the Great Depression, because this is not just a stock market bubble. It's a bubble in every possible way. And so there's a lot of pressure even for your patriots, because if their livelihoods and their autonomy is destroyed, what are you to do? So you see, even though I disagree with bailouts, and which are just causing, you know, exacerbating the problem and creating dependency, everyone's so over leveraged with debt that the suffering in the shorter term would be really bad too. But really what we're going to get is just like intense, you know, a slightly probably less intense suffering just over a much longer period of time, you know, because of the government just giving out free money. But the problem is, you see, eventually they'll create, you're in danger of hyperinflation. So you'll end up with Argentina, or you'll end up what's happening in Chile at the minute, because there's food supply problems in Chile. And then they've just got the state out hosing them down, and all they're looking for is food.
You know? Yes, and so, I mean, I don't know, you see it pretty much the U.S. going the direction that you say the U.K. has already sunk into. This, though, is the final blow.
It's obliterated any idea of free. Any sort of so-called conservatives and capitalists over here, it's obliterated that too, because it's really damaging, you know, self-employed people as well as people who are, you know, who are actually in jobs. A lot of those people who are in jobs after the furlough are going to be signed, you know, like the unemployment records as showed there earlier are going to be just basically collecting dole checks.
So would you say that even if England had been progressing towards socialism at a faster rate in the past, say, decade or two, between the combination of this replacement level immigration and these quotas and policies, both in Europe and America, between that and this economic lockdown, that perhaps it's really going to level the playing field, where it's making the U.S. forcibly catch up to the U.K. in terms of socialist dependent.
Yeah, population. And that's a big reason for the immigration. It's for voting blocks, because you get these people coming from, you know, they already come from a lot of socialist countries. So when they come here, they're getting a kind of a better version of socialism. They're coming, you know, because a lot of them have left countries like Mexico, Venezuela, places like this, wherever, where they have been suffering under the reality of socialism when it's reached its actual conclusion. So America hasn't quite got to that point yet, so it's still got some money of value to dole out. So they've brought them into America because they'll vote for free stuff, and that's a big part of it. And then you couple that with the implosion and the wrecking ball that this so-called coronavirus thing has done, and you're more, it's a massive acceleration of socialization of the country. In fact, it's more of a fascist model, because socialism fascism and communism are both aspects of socialism. All right.
Right, so, because they're both both an alignment of a big business and big government, right?
Yeah, and it's about private property. It's about the, you know, not the eradication essentially of private property, because in the fascist system, just like a communist system, the state owns everything for, in quotes, the good of the state. Okay, so the communists will come in and they'll take your home by gunpoint, but fascism will basically take your home by government programs and regulations, taxation, and, you know, an inflation of the currency as well by coming in and taking it because the dollar's collapsed. So then if you default, they'll own your home. So they don't come in and take it by gunpoint, but they'll take it essentially just like round the back door. You know what I mean? This is essentially, it's eradication of property. They can come in and, you know, and take whatever, because it's like, it's the state is all powerful. So right. You're getting rid of, you know, your own autonomy when it comes to your wealth, and then you're dependent on the state. And what can you do then? It's going to take a long time to recover. I mean, I think because of America is steeped in that, because of the Constitution, I think, you know, this will be a cleansing operation, which, you know, may well see, you know, properly draining the swamp. You know, Donald Trump promised to drain the swamp, and then he just sort of became the swamp. That's the reality. I wanted to like Trump at the end of the day. You know, he's just been, you know, okay culturally and stuff like that. He said the right things, but in many ways, he's just been, you know, another lackey, really. Certainly of Israel foreign policy, but even domestically, but some of the things he's been good at and stuff like that. I just think Trump is probably a useful idiot as well. I don't think he's the most educated guy in the world. And I think he's probably in one level well-meaning, but he's easily manipulated because of his nature and because of his ignorance of a lot of things and because of his ego, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole coronavirus thing, he had an opportunity to say, I'm the leader of this country and I'm not going to fucking shut down the economy. And I'm certainly not going to bail out everybody on the big corporations, and nobody's getting bailouts. We're going to keep the country open. This is not how we do things. But he's basically been dictated to by the Federal Reserve. He's doing everything the Federal Reserve wanted him to do. So it's well, going to take a collapse.
And a lot of these international health organizations as well, like World Health Organization, and, well, I'm sure the United Nations is coaxing people on how they should deal with coronavirus in their respective nations as well. He certainly is not as aware as you'd want a leader to be on a lot of these globalist agendas, but at the same time, many think that he's part of it more than some want to admit. They'll suggest because of his marrying his family into Jewry and just how much he's been for these Zionist political grandstands.
Whatever the reason, he's just increased the debt, so the welfare's increased as well. The warfare's increased. So what's he done? He hasn't drained the swamp. He hasn't brought back industry. He hasn't brought back all these jobs to America. The problem with Trump is he's very dangerous because he is believable, and I think that from that point of view, it's because he maybe believes it himself. But I mean, you have to judge someone on what they do, and he hasn't drained the swamp. It's going to take America to implode and then to get back to grassroots when the end game is finally run its course. And I think, you know, those who can get guns should get them, because that's why the Constitution has your Second Amendment, the gun law. So that's why it has it, because you've got a tyrannical government trying to take over the country. That's why the Second Amendment was there.
Well, as humans, by nature, we learn from our mistakes. Perhaps the best way to learn, and perhaps as a nation, we do need to have it fully implode to learn from that mistake, to learn how to rebuild it the right way. You know, something I'm curious about, though, shifting back to the UK quickly. I see you just have a couple minutes here to go.
Is your man coming on after?
I believe, yeah. If he gets in a couple minutes late, we could just go over and wait for him here then. But I'm wondering about the UK current situation with the vaccines, because I know at this point here, we're mainly wondering on the state level how many restrictions could be put in place if you don't comply, you know. But at the national level, Trump's saying that it won't be mandatory. That's what we heard as of last Friday. I'm wondering what your situation is regarding vaccines in the UK.
All right. Well, why does Trump say that? Because Trump's base, okay, Trump's base is a base of people who are libertarians, right? We don't have libertarians over here. So the government won't even have to try and sort of dog whistle to the so-called freedom-loving population of the UK. If the government says jump, the people of the UK say how high. I mean, the people of the UK, the main criticism of the government is because they haven't been clear enough. These are the same people who criticize Adolf Hitler. It's like, tell us what to do. This is what we need the government to do. Tell us, we can't make a fucking decision. It's like, tell us what to do. You've been too vague. Well, why are you criticizing Adolf Hitler? He wasn't vague. This was a guy who knew exactly what he wanted the people to do. You know, that's what their problem with Boris Johnson and the government is. You're being too vague. Tell us what to do. So if they tell them to take a vaccine, what do you think they're going to do? The 90% of the population, they'll be running off. They'll be getting up early in the morning to go and get it. I mean, the people, I think the people in this country demanded lockdown as much as the government did. I think it even took Boris Johnson and even the people who are the people we're talking about in their agenda. I think they couldn't believe just how easy it was for the British people to go into lockdown. I mean, the scariest thing over here was not the government. It's the people.
Okay, so there's a strong socially engineered sense of compliance that most of the population already is well under the spell of there, and you're one of the few who's broken out of the spell, or perhaps never fully fell into it in your adulthood, which is great. So, I mean, but does that mean that you could assume there may be strong restrictions, such as like having do you have standard driver's license reissued, you know, every number of years there, just like here, things like that, being able to drive, or perhaps even just for small businesses, of course, to fly on a plane here, go in a federal building, and let's see, what's the third one?
They'll fine you. Yeah, that'll be the first move. They'll fine you. If you don't take the vaccine, you know, we're not a complete, you know, sort of like total communist state yet. You know, we still have people who march for free speech and all that, but they're a minority. But, you know, most people will take the vaccine. Anybody who doesn't take the vaccine will receive the usual social ostracization, considered reckless, not sort of having the wider population's interest at heart. And they'll penalize you somehow. You know, they'll probably give you a fine. You could be dragged up in front of a court and some female liberal judge and dressed down or whatever. Maybe you'll do a short sentence or something in the worst case scenario. But yeah, if the government brings out a vaccine and decides that, you see, the way they could do it is, see, they're already saying it, that we won't be able to open up the economy properly until we've got a vaccine. So if people don't take vaccines, the pressure is going to be tremendous, because everyone's going to say, well, you say, it's people like you who are causing me to lose my livelihood. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure. They know how to, like, manipulate the mob against people. That's what all these zombie movies are about, I think. You know, when you watch these zombie movies, you get these few people who haven't been bitten yet. They're running about hiding out against these zombies. There isn't a Jewish central banker in sight, is there? There's no politicians in sight. It's just the population you're terrified of.
Right. Absolutely.
Put it this way, Richard. If I sense it's getting that bad, mate, and I do sense it, you know, it could be heading that way. But if we get that bad, all I hope is I can get on an airplane. And I'll tell you another thing. You know that wall that Trump promised to build?
Yeah.
You better be careful what you wished for, because if the Democrats get in. There was a wall built in Berlin, and it kept the East Germans who were under communism from escaping. And if you climbed that wall, you were shot. And that wall, people think, was designed to keep the Mexicans out. That wall could end up being there to keep the Americans in, because communism cannot work without people making it work, because that is the lifeblood that the communist parasites suck on. So that's why they built the wall, and that's why they shot anybody who tried to escape from East Germany to West Germany. So I would, the Americans should be careful about building that wall in the current climate with some of these
fucking vampires who are likely to take Donald Trump's place in November.
Wow, interesting. Here I thought that what you were going to say is if it gets that bad there with forced vaccinations and the like, that you'd find a way to get over to the States here, but you have no faith in the future of the U.S. I guess it would be some other place.
Maybe if you had a secession in some of the states where you could like be autonomous and not be ruled by the federal government. That's why we fought right. here to get away from the EU. But what we really need to do is get away from big government in our own country. That's why we were so difficult to get away from the EU, because there's massive collusion with these authoritarian types in the EU, in our own government, in a fifth column, pretending they're trying to negotiate the exit from the EU when they're really over there, you know, trying to get us to stay in it and make it so difficult for us to leave. So if you had a secession movement in the States where you even had like one state that successfully seceded from the federal government and what's coming down the tracks, I would be there, mate. I'd love to spend the next 25, 30 years of my life with some sort of, you know, similar type situation to what was created in the 19th century in America. Everyone would. What was great about America? Who wouldn't? You know, but it's going to be very difficult, because even if you had one or two states seceding, you know, they're going to be living in a very hostile environment surrounding them. So really what you want is like a lot of states seceding them, you know, seceding this power of the federal government, which the Constitution limits. And it's just been ignored. And as long as time goes on, people just don't really refer to the Constitution. They don't know the history of the country. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I'm thinking, well, where do I go? Where would you go? You could go to some of the Scandinavian countries, but it's so expensive. And they're quite socialistic as well. But I mean, they've got some sort of functioning version of it. It's not tyrannical per se. You could go to New Zealand's a good spot, but it's just so far away. And I hate the accent.
It seems like there's a lot of social engineering now. When I look at how much penalizing of anyone who has a copy of the Christchurch shooting video, they're so concerned about the gun control and just censoring dissent in that sense. I don't know. Like you mentioned about some of the Nordic regions, I guess you were suggesting like Iceland, who seem to be rather liberated at the moment. Well, Switzerland, I know it's very difficult to get citizenship, but
Switzerland would be a great place to go, but it's and it's expensive as hell. I mean, you really need to have money. If you had money, you could go there. But
it looks like we have Graham.
I don't know where you'd go, mate.
Looks like we have Graham on with us.
Hello, Graham.
Hi. Can you hear me? Okay.
How you doing, mate? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, not bad. How's you, Paul?
Very well, mate. How you getting on?
All right. Yeah, not bad, all things considered.
Good man. I haven't spoken to you in a while.
Yes, I know, that's right.
How are you getting on with all this lockdown and coronavirus bullshit?
It's kind of eased off here a bit, to be honest. The hysteria has died down a bit. Roads are starting to get busy again. People are going about their business to a large extent.
Right. Well, that's good.
Yeah, Graham,
I did have a funny... I'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah, go on.
2 days ago, I went into my local shop, and the girls behind a Perspex, screen, and I bought some shop and passed it over for her, and she, beeped everything. And it's a mini supermarket. It's a tiny little supermarket, basically. It's like a... I took out my card, and I tried to put my card on the card, contactless. It didn't work anyway. I tried a few times. So I took my card and I licked the chip, and then I rubbed the card on the back of my jeans a couple of times. And she went, oh, I can't allow that. And I went, oh, it'll be fine. And then I put my card on the reader and it went beep. And her face was bright red. She was really angry, like she was ready to blow a gasket.
I'll tell you another story, mate. I went to, particularly at the start, it was right at the start of the lockdown, I pulled into a fill station. You guys call it a gas station over there, Richard. And the, I only had cash on me. They wouldn't take cash at the start of this because before they were wearing gloves. I said, what do you mean? He said, I don't want to get the coronavirus. And I'll tell you another thing. That's what this has done. This whole coronavirus has accelerated this cashless society thing as well, you know?
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Big time. You know, before you know it, you won't be, you know, fucking money's just going to be a thing of the past. And, yeah, every little transaction will be monitored. And you'll never be able to have a bit of cash and pay anybody in cash. And, you know.
That's definitely where we're headed.
Yeah. So, you know, putting cash on, you know, in your drawer at home for an emergency and all that, of course, they don't want you to be ready for an emergency. So, you know, you're never going to have cash because if you want to get out of the country or anything, they know every little movement, every transaction. It's so fucking oppressive, man. I'm sick of it. I mean, I don't think Richard really understands. I was just talking to him, but it's just like, as bad as it is in America, you know, we have such a police state kind of sort of general vibe over here, don't we? You can't do anything without the government interfering. It's just normal over here, isn't it, Greg?
All right, where are you again, Paul?
I'm in London.
London, okay, an Irishman in London.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I'm enjoying the fact that the traffic is so light in the morning. And, you know, the petrol prices are cheaper and the roads are quiet. It's just blissful when I'm going to work. So it's not all bad, for me personally, but obviously, I mean, the whole thing's just a mess, you know.
How much is a litre of petrol and diesel down there?
Well, they got petrol down 99.9. At Tesco.
Wow.
I know, yeah. I just fill it up, man. I've been filling up jerry cans and stuff as well. It's just like, you know. I mean, the roads have picked up a little bit, but I mean, I think the other thing is, I mean, there's a lot of people have got used to being furloughed and getting paid the same money and sitting at home and not having to go to their shitty job. So there's a lot of people who are basically, you know, amplifying and exaggerating this thing because the roads are so quiet in the morning. And then at the weekends, they're massively busy. And I'm thinking, well, is the coronavirus more deadly in the mornings or in the workplace? Because you don't seem to be too scared of it at the weekends. But, you know, every time you listen to the LBC or these radio shows or read the papers, everybody's terrified of going back to work. And I'm thinking, well, you know, the beaches were full down in Bournemouth and at the weekend and stuff. They were crowded. And yet, I just think people think this is a holiday. And when the furlough's ending, a lot of people think they're just going to go back to work. But I think the penny's dropping that they're not going back to work. They're going straight to the fucking dole queue, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think there's a lot of people, though, aware that the mainstream narrative is grossly exaggerated. And, you know, there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. I mean, even my old man, thinks of that. And he doesn't even have an... he's not even on the internet.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're right, Graham, because it's like... It's kind of hard to find people. I mean, you know, it's just like even, you know, even people you think would be criticizing it. You know, even like people like Farage and stuff. All they're doing is criticizing the implementation of this lockdown and how the mistakes were made. There's very few people are actually really questioning and criticizing the actual lockdown itself. I mean, I think they're starting to because they realize it's all a pile of bullshit. You know.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. I don't know, though, but if you scratch below the surface, I mean, like, every death is being recorded as COVID-19, cardiac arrest, sepsis, cancer, COVID-19, COVID-19. Yeah. You get hit, you know, you get involved in a car accident, COVID-19. It's ridiculous, but that's what they're doing. They're trying to grossly exaggerate the numbers. But even in their grossly exaggerated state, they're no more than you would normally expect with a seasonal flu.
Yeah. And I heard, I don't know where, I wish I'd have taken note of it. I must have been tired and I just sort of thought, oh, I'll get back to it. But I don't know where I read it or did someone text me something. But hospitals for every coronavirus are getting something like 7,000 pounds or something for every death that's recorded as a coronavirus thing. I forget the full details of that story and the angles of it, but you know, there's obviously some backhanders going on for individuals and hospitals high up, and also hospitals trying to get extra money and funding and all sorts of stuff going on. I mean, it's just
we had the equivalent of that here in the U.S. as well. Hospitals getting paid $13,000 for every patient admitted who they consider COVID positive. who dies, and then, well, no, I'm sorry, even if they don't die, whether they die or not, just so that they're positive, 13,000, and then anyone on a ventilator, they get 39,000 for every patient they put on
yeah.
a ventilator.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Where did that come from? Is there any? Where does that story come from? Who broke that? Was it?
Well, there are a lot of doctors. Well, no, we've had a lot of doctors on YouTube just whistleblowing on their own. We've had a lot of independents, a lot of citizen journalism.
Yeah, there was those guys over in California. Yeah, they came out. Yeah, that video was deleted, wasn't it? In California, the two doctors came out and said that they were under a lot of pressure to record deaths as COVID-19, and they said, well, we can't do it ethically. And then that video was deleted off YouTube.
Hey, Paul. Right. Paul, can you stick around a bit into Graham's show here? I'm just wondering for the sake of the archive.
I'll stick around as long as Graham is happy to have me around, because we just had a chat on my show, Graham, because we're just sort of chewing the fat about all this stuff, you know. But
why don't you just, for the sake of the archive, just say goodnight to your listeners. I can skip all the music for the moment, and then Graham could introduce the show to his listeners. I'll patch in the music for the archives.
Okay.
All right, cool. Okay, folks, so thanks for joining me tonight. Hope you enjoyed the show and the chat we had with Richard, and I'll be back again next Thursday at the same time. So until then, take care and stay safe.